All right, we started a new series last week. A handful of you guys were not here, so just to do a little bit of a recap from last week, we are starting a new series in Esther, and I've titled this sermon series, God's Providence in Silence. And what providence means, children, which is, it's a big word, right? You probably don't remember. It's the protective care and the spiritual care of God. So God is protecting his people and caring for them. And it's called providence. And the reason it's titled In Silence is because as we read the book of Esther, it seems like God is absent. Again, Esther is unique. It's never quoted in the New Testament. There's no mention of prayer in this book. A heathen king is mentioned nearly 200 times, but there is no mention of God at all in the book of Esther. But that does not mean that he is not present and working. We see his providence throughout the entire book. And the reason I love Esther is it mirrors our life so much. We don't regularly see God perform miracles, do we? We don't audibly hear the voice of God like we read about in the Old Testament. And yet God is still present and at work in our lives as well. We just need to know how to see his working hand in our lives. So before we get started, I want us to be thinking about concealed identities this morning. We're going to look at a few of them. Any Star Wars fans here? There's a whole group of boys in the back. All right, a stormtrooper. This is actually just a screenshot from a video, but if you watch the video, you'll hear this stormtrooper, or you'll see him walk up to this man and say, "Would you like to meet Mark Hamill?" Now, for those of you who aren't Star Wars fans, Mark Hamill played Luke Skywalker. He's the main character. So he walks up, asks this guy, "Would you like to meet Mark Hamill?" "Absolutely, he's the man." Well, Mark Hamill, who was the first to play Luke Skywalker in the Star Wars franchise, dressed up as a stormtrooper at the 2018 San Diego Comic-Con, and he went around asking attendees if they would like to donate money to the Star Wars Force for Change charity. If people would donate money, they would be entered into a raffle for the chance to meet Mark Hamill. No one realized they just did. Next one. Blurry photo. Again, this was a screenshot taken from a video. But this one, on a recent Monday night at a Los Angeles karaoke bar, a meek-looking woman in a business suit and glasses was coaxed on stage by her co-workers. While the boozy crowd readied itself for 4 minutes of awkward singing, the woman, named Karen, suddenly belted out pitch-perfect renditions of the Jewel songs Who Will Save Your Soul and Foolish Games. Astonished crowd members picked their jaws off the floor and cheered wildly. Karen really was the Grammy-nominated artist herself, who was given a prosthetic nose, wig, and glasses in order to go undercover for the comedy website Funny or Die. So again, people got to meet Jewel and they didn't even realize it. Next one, Danny Woodhead. In 2010, Danny Woodhead, running back for the New England Patriots, attempted to go unrecognized by shoppers at Modell's Sporting Goods, where he posed as an employee named Dan for 1 hour and worked to sell his own number 39 jerseys and t-shirts. Woodhead, who is generously listed at 5'9" by the Patriots, was almost revealed by one shopper who thought she recognized him, but then said he was too little to be him. He ended up selling 7 jerseys and 7 t-shirts before his 1 hour shift ended. And if you watch the video, it is pretty funny. He just looks like a college age kid selling jerseys. Last one, and this one's fairly famous. You guys might have heard this one before. Joshua Bell. On Friday, January 12, 2007, as part of an experiment by the Washington Post, Joshua Bell, world-famous violinist, disguised himself as a street busker in plain clothes and a ball cap. 3 days before this experiment, he had played to a sold-out crowd at Boston Symphony Hall. Now he was about to stun the masses of people in Washington's metro. He picked up his violin, which was handcrafted in 1713 and is now worth $15 million. And he played six classical songs. 3.5 minutes went by until he earned his first dollar. 6 minutes went by until someone stopped to listen. His last song, Ave Maria, ended with the sound of thunderous silence. In 45 minutes, only 7 people stopped to listen longer than 1 minute. 27 people gave money, most of them on the run. And 1,070 people passed without even turning to look. He made a total of $32.17. One of the most famous musicians in the world, playing one of the most expensive instruments in the world, hidden in plain sight. His identity was only recognized by one person the whole time. Who was right in front of him. But today we're going to read about another story of someone who was told to keep their true identity hidden. This is kind of fun hearing these stories and being like, how foolish can people be? But I think it's... You what?
I have a piece at home.
Oh, of Joshua Bell?
Yes, I know very well.
Yeah, so you would have recognized him, huh?
Yes.
Yeah. So this is kind of fun, but when we read the Bible, we realize there's another person that was told to keep their identity hidden, and it worked until the time was right. So we're going to read about that today. Just a little background before we get to Esther. What's the setting in Esther? Why are we reading about this Persian king and things like that? Well, back in Deuteronomy, this is before God's people were about to enter into the promised land, Moses gave this sermon and this warning in the sermon about staying true to Yahweh God. And the Lord, through Moses, said, take care lest you forget the covenant of the Lord your God, which he made with you, and make a carved image, the form of anything that the Lord your God has forbidden you. For the Lord your God is a consuming fire, a jealous God. So God had made this covenant with the people of Israel. He was going to be their God, and they were going to be his people. But it was almost like a marriage. They needed to be true to one another. And it goes on, I call heaven and earth to witness against you today that you will soon utterly perish from the land that you are going over the Jordan to possess. You will not live long in it, but will be utterly destroyed. And the Lord will scatter you among the peoples, and you will be left few in number among the nations where the Lord will drive you. So again, as long as they worshiped Yahweh exclusively, they would be in the promised land, the place that God gave as an inheritance to them. But if they turned and served idols, they would be taken out of the land. When you are in tribulation, so when you are taken out of the land by another nation, and all these things come upon you in the latter days, you will return to the Lord your God and obey his voice. For the Lord your God is a merciful God. He will not leave you or destroy you or forget the covenant with your fathers that he swore to them. So again, even though generations of people, of God's people, would turn to idols and worship them, the Lord would be faithful to his side of the covenant. He would be at work through that whole time, still bringing that remnant of people who would worship him. Even though they would be taken away to another nation, the Lord would be at work, and one day he would change their hearts and bring them back. That's what he promised. And as you read the Old Testament, you realize all of this played out just as the Lord said here in Deuteronomy 4. So where we read in Esther, this is when God's people are in captivity in Babylon, which was taken over by Persia. So this is a different land outside of the promised land. So here Israel was right around here. And now they're scattered. And Esther takes place in the city of Susa. Okay? This is during the time where Ezra is rebuilding in Jerusalem. So one of the kings allowed some of the Jewish people to go back. But Esther takes place in Susa. This is a story of the Jews living in a different place. Last week, we read Esther chapter 1, and we read about this king, King Ahasuerus. And he threw this six-month-long party. He wants to impress the leaders and the military guests. So he has this 6-month-long party for them, and then he holds a 1-week-long party for everyone in the whole city, and the wine is flowing. He wants to show off his queen's beauty, but she refuses to come before him and his drunk friends, and he gets angry, and he says, "What shall be done?" Queen Vashti is then banished from the throne, and another will take her place. And the king sent letters out into his kingdom that every man shall be master of his own household. And we need to ask ourselves, how long will people have to live under this wicked king's rule? Who will be the new queen? And what will she be like? And that's where we are today. Esther chapter 2, first 4 verses. After these things, when the anger of King Ahasuerus had abated, he remembered Vashti and what she had done and what had been decreed against her. Then the king's young men who attended him said, "Let beautiful young virgins be sought out for the king, and let the king appoint officers in all the provinces of his kingdom to gather all the beautiful young virgins to the harem in Susa, the citadel, under custody of Hegai, the king's eunuch, who is in charge of the women. Let their cosmetics be given them, and let the young woman who pleases the king be queen instead of Vashti." This pleased the king, and he did so. Again, we get this picture of King Ahasuerus. It's not very righteous, is it? In chapter 1, we saw him throwing parties and the flow of wine. And now in chapter 2, we're going to see the flow of women. He's holding this, in a sense, beauty contest to build his harem. And he's looking for that one to become queen. Esther 2:5-7. "Now there was a Jew in Susa, the citadel, whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jair, son of Shimei, son of Kish, a Benjaminite, who had been carried away from Jerusalem among the captives, carried away with Jeconiah, king of Judah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, had carried away. He was bringing up Hadassah, that is Esther, the daughter of his uncle, for she had neither father nor mother. The young woman had a beautiful figure and was lovely to look at, and when her father and her mother died, Mordecai took her as his own daughter." So here we're introduced to 2 new people, and these are 2 main characters in the book of Esther. First one is Mordecai. What do we read about Mordecai? He's a Jew. He is one of the people of God. He's of the tribe of Benjamin. Put that on the back burner, because that's going to matter the next time we go into Esther chapter 3. And he was among the captives from Jerusalem. So he knew of God's people and their life in Jerusalem. He was carried away to Babylon and to Persia. The other person we're introduced to is his cousin, Hadassah. That's her Hebrew name. Her Persian name is Esther. And she is the daughter of his uncle. So again, they're cousins, but she is probably much, much younger because she's an orphan and he takes her in as his own daughter. And we also read that she is very beautiful. So we're getting this picture of these 2 main characters, and the story goes on in verse 8. "So when the king's order and his edict were proclaimed, and when many young women were gathered in Susa, the citadel, in custody of Hegai, Esther also was taken into the king's palace and put in custody of Hegai, who had charge of the women. And the young woman pleased him and won his favor. And he quickly provided her with her cosmetics and her portion of food and with 7 chosen young women from the king's palace and advanced her and her young women to the best place in the harem. Esther had not made known her people or kindred, for Mordecai had commanded her not to make it known. And every day Mordecai walked in front of the court of the harem to learn how Esther was and what was happening to her." So, the search for the queen, it takes many different steps. The first is the transport. Now, can you imagine throughout all of the Persian Empire, there are women being taken, young women, girls taken from their families and homes, and they're being sent to Susa, to the king's harem. Just imagine what that would have been like. Imagine being a father and thinking, wow, my daughter's beautiful. I hope they don't come around here. But that's what's happening all throughout the kingdom. After the transport, there's this gathering. They're taken to Susa and kept under the guard of the king's eunuch, Haggai. And then there is an assigning. They're given to the custody of Haggai in the house of the women. And here, he's choosing the top ones that have been provided. And Esther is among the top eight. Now, as we keep moving, you're going to see God's hand in all of this. As we're reading right now, you're saying, okay, coincidence maybe. But I think it's more than that. The Lord's setting up something to work really big. Just to get a picture of what this might have been like, this is a picture of an old harem. I couldn't find the date on this building, but you can kind of just get a picture of what it may have been like in that part of the world back in that day. Imagine eunuchs and women all gathered around, and here's Mordecai, Esther's adopted father, and he's coming by every day to see how she's doing. I think it's telling us he loves her. He wants to make sure she's okay. And it just so happens that he has a position in the kingdom. His job is at the gate of the city, so he's got a higher position as a job. It just so happens that he has that, and he's able to walk by the king's harem and check on her. And this is really big, he had advised her not to reveal her identity, her people, or her kindred. Why? Why is that a big deal? Well, if we read some of the other stories that have taken place when the Jews were in captivity, like the book of Daniel, Mordecai probably knew the hostility that happened towards some of the Jewish people during that time. Think of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego refusing to bow down to the king's image, and they were thrown into the fiery furnace. We think of Daniel, who was praying when he was commanded not to, and he was thrown into the den of lions. There is this hostility towards the Jewish people because they worship a different God, and not all of them are assimilating to Persian culture. And Mordecai knows this, and I think he's wanting to warn Esther, don't reveal your identity unless you need to, because you might face great hostility. So until we know it's okay, until the time is right, it's best to just keep this hidden. So here we have this hidden identity in the plain sight of the king and his court. Let's keep reading. Now when the turn came for each young woman to go in to King Ahasuerus, after being 12 months under the regulations for the women, since this was the regular period of their beautifying, 6 months with oil of myrrh and 6 months with spices and ointments for women. When the young woman went in to the king in this way, she was given whatever she desired to take with her from the harem to the king's palace. In the evening she would go in, and in the morning she would return to the second harem in custody of Shazgaz, the king's eunuch, who was in charge of the concubines. She would not go in to the king again, unless the king delighted in her and she was summoned by name. So very different than our culture. But here we also see the other steps that it is going to take for a woman to become the queen. There's this treatment period, 1 year of spas and treatments. Women, how does that sound? That part of the story sounds pretty good, doesn't it? The spices? Well, it depends what they are, right? But there's this, think of that, a year of preparation. Who's going to be queen? And then there's this sorting. So each one gets this chance to meet with the king at night, and they get to pick items to wear in front of the king. And then comes the crucial night. Are they going to please the king? Is he going to be pleased with them and choose that one woman to be queen? If she does not, she goes to the harem, the second harem, and begins a new life there under Shazgaz, and will only see the king again if called by name. This does not sound like a very good place for women to live, does it? What will happen? This story is already setting that up. This does not look good. Let's keep reading. When the turn came for Esther, the daughter of Abihail, the uncle of Mordecai, who had taken her as his own daughter to go into the king, she asked for nothing except what Haggai, the king's eunuch, who had charge of the women, advised. Now Esther was winning favor in the eyes of all who saw her. And when Esther was taken to King Ahasuerus into his royal palace in the 10th month, which is the month of Tebeth, in the 7th year of his reign, the king loved Esther more than all the women. And she won grace and favor in his sight more than all the virgins, so that he set the royal crown on her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. Then the king gave a great feast for all his officials and servants. It was Esther's feast. He also granted a remission of taxes to the provinces and gave gifts with royal generosity. We have our queen. Esther won the favor of everyone. She pleased the king and became the new queen. Now, I was looking for old Persian jewelry. This is, I didn't know the year, but you can kind of see what may have been placed on her as jewelry. And she, now that she's queen, remember we read, not only is she made queen, but there's this great feast given for all the officials and servants, and also remission of taxes, and gave gifts with royal generosity. This is like that thing that shoots the t-shirts up in the crowd, right? Except it's kingdom-wide. He's giving gifts. Everyone's glad that there is a queen chosen. Everyone is benefiting from this. So, to finish the chapter. Now, when the virgins were gathered together the second time, Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate. Esther had not made known her kindred or her people, as Mordecai had commanded her. For Esther obeyed Mordecai, just as when she was brought up by him. In those days, as Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate, Bigthan and Teresh, two of the king's eunuchs, who guarded the threshold, became angry and sought to lay hands on King Ahasuerus. And this came to the knowledge of Mordecai, and he told it to Queen Esther, and Esther told the king in the name of Mordecai. When the affair was investigated and found to be so, the men were both hanged on the gallows, and it was recorded in the book of the Chronicles in the presence of the king. So we are reminded again, her identity is not known. This will be important later. But then we also read, Mordecai is sitting at the king's gate. Again, he held this influential position in the city. And he learns of this plot when it says they were going to lay hands on King Ahasuerus. That's not in a nice way. That's not a hug or, hey, how you doing? They're wanting to kill him. And Mordecai learns of this plot to kill Ahasuerus. And he goes and he tells Esther. And Esther tells the king in the name of Mordecai. And it's recorded. And again, this is just setting up for later on in the story, so remember this. But it's important that this just happened to be recorded. She happened to tell it to the king in the name of Mordecai. And the guilty were hanged. And again, I don't want to get too descriptive here, but a lot of times when we hear hanged on the gallows, we might think of the Old West with a noose and things like that. This is what the Persians did, was impalement. So they were very brutal in the way that they would punish or kill people. And they made a spectacle of those who were punished. And again, I think that will be important later on. So as we read Esther chapter 2, again, we don't read anything about God, anything about prayer. Where does the gospel show up in all of this? And again, I'm probably going to be quoting Romans 8:28 quite a bit as we're going through this series. But this is how God works. We know that for those who love God, all things work together for good, for those who are called according to His purpose. He doesn't go back on His covenant. Even though the Jewish people were unfaithful and taken away into captivity, the Lord remains faithful and He is at work. The promised Messiah that He promised way back in Genesis 3 has not come yet. His word stands. He's going to bring this people back to the land. He's going to provide a Messiah. And even though this group of Jews are still in captivity, they're living in an unbelieving place, God is at work. Esther is a story of faithful people living in a foreign land under an unrighteous king, and God is working things out for His glory and their good. We're not getting into a lot of the wow moments in Esther yet. This is chapter 1 and 2 is kind of the setup to the rest of the book. But we think about their lives. They're living in this difficult situation. The king is building his harem. He's taking girls from their families all around his kingdom. And yet Mordecai has faith through that situation. Coincidence or God's providence? Think about this. It just so happened that Esther is chosen to go to the king's palace in Susa. It just so happened that Esther pleased Haggai. It just so happened that Esther wins his favor and of those around her. It just so happened that Esther is chosen as one of the top 8 women. It just so happened that Esther was loved by the king more than the others. And it just so happened that Esther was chosen to be queen of Persia. Coincidence? That's a lot of just so happened, isn't it? And as we read the story, we're going to realize, no, this is God at work. Do we believe in coincidences? Maybe it can happen, I don't know. But I think more often than not, it's because God is at work. Even when things in our life don't make any sense to us. This is just a trivial story in a way, but it's stuck with me for years. There was one time I was driving on the highway and the car in front of me was slow. I was in a hurry to get somewhere and the car was driving so slow. I couldn't pass. And I'm getting angry and upset, and I really felt it wasn't an audible voice from God, but it was clear enough that I heard He's saying, I'm actually keeping you from an accident up the road. And it just humbled me and it stuck with me for years now. When I get into those types of situations, I shouldn't be impatient because the Lord might be at work. He might be very gracious in saving me from an accident or saving me from a hardship. And I should be obeying the law and driving safe, right? But it was one of those humbling moments for me where God's saying, I'm at work in this. Don't get mad. And I want to challenge us as a church, whatever trial we have gone through or are going through. My story was kind of dumb, but we think about this. Why am I suffering with an illness? Why do I have to go through this difficult work situation? Why did I lose a loved one? Why do I have a hard marriage? Well, it might be because God is at work in the midst of that. He might be allowing things to happen so that we learn who He is and how He works. He might be setting things up to show off how amazing He is and how faithful His people are in the midst of trials and suffering. And He's inviting you and I and all of us to be a part of His work. And He doesn't work the way we want Him to. And thank God for that. Because we don't know much, do we? And He invites us into these trials and into these situations of suffering and hardship because He wants to show off how great He is. My people worship me even though they go through that. I'm going to show up in ways that they can't even imagine. Another way we see the gospel in Esther 2. Esther shadows another story of hidden identity and how God works. Think about this. Esther was adopted by Mordecai. Jesus was adopted by Joseph. Esther won the grace and favor of all who saw her. And Luke 2:52 says, Jesus increased in wisdom and in stature and in favor with God and men. Esther will keep her identity hidden until the right time, and Jesus kept his identity hidden until the right time. And God works so opposite to the ways of the world. He takes the weak to shame the strong. He takes fools to shame the wise. And he takes the humble and he exalts them. One last thing I've been thinking about all week. At the end of this chapter, what do we see? We see this assassination plot, and Mordecai overhears it. Now think about it. He's living in Persia, and he's a Jew. This plot is against a pagan king. His attitude wasn't, I'm a Jewish man in exile under a wicked king, so I do not care if he is killed. He could have allowed it to happen just by remaining silent. But instead, he fulfilled Peter's thought in 1 Peter 2:17 before Peter ever wrote it. Honor everyone, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the emperor. And this has been humbling for me as I'm thinking about this all week. Do we live with this same attitude toward our nation's leaders, towards our state leaders, towards our city leaders? And I put an empty frame because you might have someone in your life it's hard to live under or with. But do we have this attitude? Or do we walk around and complain and speak out of ignorance and arrogance about our leaders and those God has placed around us? And church, it's hard, isn't it? There's a lot of terrible things going on in the government and the leaders that we see and those that we work with or work for. Things are not right. And it's so easy to complain to each other about other people. But I think we can learn something from Mordecai here. He has faith that God's going to be at work throughout this terrible situation. And he honors the emperor, even though he's a wicked man who just took his adopted daughter into his harem. So as Christians, we are trying to be a faithful people in a foreign land under unrighteous leadership, and God is working things out for his glory and for our good. So just like famous people hiding in plain sight, just like Esther concealing her identity until the proper time, just like Jesus concealing his identity until the proper time, we also are invited to live quiet lives on a secret mission to make disciples and grow God's kingdom. So whatever season we are going through, we need to keep our faith, worship King Jesus, honor our leaders, and grow the kingdom. Amen? Let's pray. Lord Jesus, we thank you for your word, and we thank you for the way that it challenges us. And Lord, forgive us for the ways that we speak out of pride or ignorance. Give us faith, Lord. Give us humility to rest in the fact that you are at work. You will see that justice happens, and you invite us to walk humbly, to live quietly, to make disciples within our sphere of influence, Lord. Keep us grounded in your word and in your ways. And give us attitudes of love and of patience and of faith. And all God's people said. Amen.